If you listen to our podcast, Codebreaker, you know we have talked a fair bit about the possibility of algorithms having bias baked in. Well, this week, a statistical analysis from ProPublica has detailed how some algorithms that are being used in the administration of justice appear to be clearly biased along racial lines, with some disturbing results. Julia Engwin is senior reporter for ProPublica and worked on this. Julia, thanks for talking with me.
It's great to be here.
So let's do a quick rundown of what we do know about how these algorithms work.
Sure. So we looked at risk assessment algorithms that are used throughout the criminal justice system, and essentially they are often questionnaires about an individual defendant, and they ask about your previous criminal history, your family and education and job, and then make an assessment of basically low, medium, or high risk of whether you're going to go on to commit a future crime. So the one we looked at also had a special rating scale for whether you're going to go on to commit a violent crime.
Mm. And they also ask these kind of interesting philosophical questions, right? Like, is it okay to steal if you're hungry?
Yeah. There's a questionnaire. It's 137 questions long that is the full assessment. Not everybody is given all 137. In the jurisdiction we were looking at, many of them were given just 50. But when you do the full assessment, there's a whole section. Basically, it's called criminal thinking. And they assess whether you agree with statements like it's okay to steal if you're hungry, or it's okay to steal from rich people. And these questions are used to assess like your criminal mind.
When do these questions get asked of people who are brought in?
So the way it works in the county we analyzed was that when you're arrested, it happens at right after booking. So you're arrested and booked into jail. And as part of the intake process, they ask you a bunch of questions. One thing to note about these scores is not every question needs to be asked to the person. So the staff can fill in your prior criminal record and like maybe half of the questions they fill out themselves and another half they ask.
And these questions are all, we would assume, given some kind of weight as they're built into an algorithm that makes a calculation about your likelihood of committing a future crime.
That's right. And we don't know the weights and the exact calculations of those formulas.
Because they're proprietary.
They are proprietary.
How are these scores applied in the justice system process?
So these risk assessments are actually being used throughout the justice system. But where we focused on was at sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that a judge would get a score while they're making the sentencing decision. So they've already decided you're guilty. They're just trying to decide. Often what judges are trying to decide is, are you eligible for probation or do you have to go to prison? And so when they see this score, that's part of the package of their decision making, which is like, are you a high risk or are you a low risk? And then they use that to inform their sentencing decisions. And that's being done with this particular instrument that we looked at. It's being used for sentencing decisions in Wisconsin, in New York State, and in San Francisco.
Do most prisoners, people who are moving through the system, criminals, do they know?
I interviewed a lot of people who were scored, and none of them had really any understanding or knowledge that they had been scored. Their lawyers do, their public defenders often, but there's not a lot that they can do about it, right? They can't challenge the score because they don't know if it says their client is low. How do they challenge that if they don't know what went into the score?
Right. What did your statistical analysis tell you?
So our statistical analysis told us three things. One is the score is not that predictive. So we analyzed the criminal records of people for 2 years after they were scored.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the founder of the score itself says is a good measure of whether you're going to commit another crime. And only 61% of the people that they predicted would commit another crime did, and only 20% of those that they said would commit a violent crime did. Mm-hmm. So that's not it's better than a coin toss, at least on the general recidivism, but it's not a great success rate. Then we found even more troubling that although the score was predictive for whites and blacks equally at the high level, both about 60%, that it failed differently. So blacks were twice as likely to be given a high risk score incorrectly, meaning that they did not go on to reoffend. And whites were twice as likely to get a low risk score incorrectly, meaning they got a low risk, but they did go on to reoffend. So those failure rates to us were really the key findings, because even if its overall predictive validity is about the same, the idea that you're twice as likely to get the very bad outcome of looking high risk when you're not is troubling. And then third, we did this sort of crazy analysis just to check whether there was any other way you could explain this disparity. And so we corrected for your age and gender and criminal history just to make sure. And we still saw that African-American defendants got a 45% higher score when correcting for all those factors.
Hmm. Tell me about the different organizations that build this stuff.
So the crazy thing about the risk scoring industry is heavily populated. There are a lot of states and jurisdictions build their own scores. They might hire an academic at a university to do it.
Mm-hmm.
There are dozens of homegrown scores. We focused on one of the two nationwide commercial vendors. So there were two players that are really in it, you know, for profit with proprietary algorithms and selling it across the nation. But every time I turn around, I hear about it, yet another score. In fact, I was joking earlier that maybe I should start one myself because it seems like a booming industry.
Right. North Point is one of them. How does North Point make its money?
So North Point makes its money by selling the software to jurisdictions who buy it. And then they also do get paid for training. So they go in and they train people how to use the software, how to do the assessments, how to ask the questions. I think they also do training for judges about how to read these scores, because there have been, unfortunately, cases where the judge has actually read the wrong score or
right,
misunderstood.
Or they get it flipped or something.
Yeah.
five is good, but it's actually bad or,
right.
You know, or something.
Exactly.
Is North Point getting data? It's getting government data, right, essentially, and then it's turning it into an algorithm. Like, do you know what I'm asking?
I don't think that North Point keeps the data that, like, is being used. So I'm not actually sure about this. But in Broward County, Florida, for instance, where we got the data, we did a Freedom of Information Act request.
Sure.
That data is stored at Broward County. Compass Software manages that data.
Uh-huh.
I do not know whether they really send that data back to North Point. So,
right.
But
I guess what I'm asking is the government gathers the data.
Yes.
on people moving through the system.
Yep.
North Point accesses that data, uses it to build the algorithm, and then sells that algorithm to the government. Is that
yeah,
correct?
Essentially. The way it works is that the way North Point got started was actually in New York State. They did some trials with a couple different probation departments who let them come in and access, give their questionnaire to a bunch of probationers. Then they looked at the outcomes, adjusted the questions, you know, did several iterations of learning off of the data, and then built their score from there.
Is any of the data that they get from minors, from minors who get a record?
So in Wisconsin, I know that the North Point system is used for juveniles. So they do score them, and there's a special juvenile risk score, which we didn't analyze because juvenile records are usually sealed. So it was hard for us to get those. But yes, there are juvenile risk assessments throughout the nation, and North Point does make one of them.
It seems like that particularly could be tricky if the juvenile's record is supposed to be expunged when they become an adult.
Correct. There are a lot of people who are troubled by the juvenile risk assessments. I didn't go into it in our story, but
sure.
For instance, in Florida, the jurisdiction that we went to, the public defenders there actually advise all of their juvenile clients not to participate in the risk assessment score.
Wow. North Point, we should say, has basically rejected your findings, right?
That's right.
What's their response been?
Well, so far they haven't said anything since the article was published. We did have many conversations with them prior to publishing, in which they raised many concerns about our statistics. We carefully considered and discussed with them every single one of those concerns, and we felt confident in our findings.
Mm-hmm.
However, I mean, I guess I'm sort of still waiting for them to come out with more, because they did continue to say throughout the process that they dispute our findings.
Right. Do you think it's possible for humans to build unbiased algorithms?
I think it's hard, actually. I mean, we spent more than a year analyzing this algorithm, and I've learned more about statistics than I ever wanted to know. And and one thing that I feel like that I learned about it is that it's really hard to do this right. And it's hard for me to imagine how you would build a better a score. I mean, if you took out certain factors, it would be less predictive. If you add more factors, then it's even more racist, more likely, because many of these factors are correlated with poverty and race.
Mm.
And I also think, just at a really high level, that I don't know that computers are that good yet. I mean, we're not that good ourselves as humans at predicting human behavior. So I still don't really know what my husband's going to do. And we've been married for 15 years. And if I can't predict his behavior with a huge amount of data, I just don't see a lot of evidence in the world that humans, that this is our best skill, predicting human behavior. I do feel like we're kind of good at predicting, you know, how a machine will behave. And we've gotten pretty good at like drone strikes and various things like that.
Sure. My next question was going to be, humans are biased, right? Algorithms are biased. Biased humans can make the right decision. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that these algorithms, bias and all, still have an impact on the justice system that is net positive?
It could be, yeah. I'm not sure, really, because it's hard to know what the previous bias was prior to these risk assessments. The previous bias was that judges made their own decisions. And probably each judge was biased in a different way. Now you might have a more consistent level of bias, and perhaps that evens out. But because we can't measure the previous level and how what kind of disparities were there, it's very hard to say. And so I am sympathetic to people who say to me, look, Julia, I really appreciate your findings, but it's still better than it was before.
Sure.
I say, okay, that's fine. Although I do feel like 20% correct predictions on violent crime is probably not enough of a standard.
Kind of low.
Yeah. But I think that in general, yeah, I think this is a very well-intentioned movement towards risk assessment scores. It's a dream to get rid of bias in our system.
Sure.
And I think that's a great goal. I'm not entirely sure this is the way that's going to get there, at least based on this one assessment that we had analyzed.
It's also, I suppose, worth acknowledging that there have been other studies that have pointed out that when people are provided scores like this, they kind of default to making the decision the score suggests they make.
Correct. So we did test that in the place where we had data. The judge there said to me definitively, I do not use this score. To be fair to him, there was really only a 20% correlation between his decisions and the score. Mm. It's a slight correlation. On the other hand, it's not nothing, and it may well be that it influences him in some way that he doesn't understand. I do think myself as a human, if somebody waves something in front of me that says this person is going to be a violent criminal, I just imagine it would affect my thinking in some way.
Mm. Julia Angwin is senior reporter for ProPublica and worked very, very hard on this piece that is out this week. Julia, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.